5:07 in the third quarter. Dropping. It's a blitz. Blake scrambles away from it. Rolling to his right. Looking into the end zone. Looking. Fires it into the end zone. No side. Touchdown. There's now a touchdown. That's Allen Robinson. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Bortles fires to the middle of the field. Caught by Allen Robinson. That's a first down. He hit A-Rob in the middle of the field inside the 20-yard line. Got it down to the 18-yard line. First down, Jacksonville.
Now I can say it with confidence. That one takes Allen Robinson over 1,000 yards receiving. Congratulations, A-Rob.
You know what you do when Allen Hurns is hurt? Throw it to A-Rob more.
First and goal, Jags from the 8-yard line. Shotgun for Bortles. Rolling to the right. Blake looks. Pump fake. Looks. Got away from the defender. Fires into the end zone. Diving attempt by Allen Robinson. Touchdown, Jacksonville. Bortles to A-Rob for the score.
He is an absolute monster.
Second down and goal, Jags from the 7-yard line. They trail 42-32. Dropping. Looking. It's a blitz. Throws to the middle of the field. That is caught for the touchdown. Allen Robinson, a 7-yard touchdown catch from Blake Bortles, and the Jags are battling back.
Now, from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, and Jeff Lagerman.
All right, we'll open up the phone lines here shortly with Jeff Lagerman on board on Jaguars Today. Good morning, everybody, as we're off and rolling.
It feels like a week where any open that Tyler plays that involves an active Jaguars player is trolling.
He's trolling us a little bit. Like, what is his intended purpose in playing that?
It's great to hear Allen Robinson in all those highlights. I wish he would have been involved in more than one play on Sunday.
Correct. Now, Logs, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. We'll start with Allen Robinson because he was featured there in the open. Certainly, Jason Verrett, we knew going in, is a tough guy, a tough cover corner. Greg Olson said the guy who played Allen Robinson probably the best last year. He said that last week. Do you have to, with a guy that big and physical, right, who can win those contested ball matchups, do you
You're talking about big and physical.
Talking about Allen Robinson. Yeah, okay. Right, Allen Robinson. Do you have to find a way as the Jaguars to almost maybe force a few to him early in the game just to keep the defense honest, let them know that, hey, we're not afraid of whatever kind of coverage you're rolling. This is our star player, and he's going to get involved early.
Sure. And, you know, give a lot of credit to Jason Verrett. He's a very young player. Third year TCU, high-level pick. And I made this statement last night because, you know, I was breaking down a couple of Blake Bortles' interceptions in that Verrett is basically like white on rice. I mean, that's what he is. He's the white, and Rice is the wide receiver. I mean, he's as good of a cover corner in the National Football League as I've seen, and certainly for a guy that's very young. And yeah, do I have a problem with them not trying to target A-Rob? You know, I don't know if they necessarily didn't. You know, I think that the amount of confidence that maybe Blake had in throwing it that way maybe wasn't there. I mean, I think there were certain plays that were designed where they had – two guys on one side, and then you got A-Rob on the other side with Jason Verrett and a safety over the top. And that's kind of surprising to see. I mean, that's most teams will take your best corner and either put your best corner on your best guy and then just leave the safety slanted the other side, or they'll take two guys double your best guy, put your best guy on the second best guy. But the Chargers gave him a lot of respect. I mean, to put Jason Verrett on A-Rob and then a safety over the top at times, wow. I mean, that's like big time.
Right.
You know, so I don't have a problem. You know, with Allen not being targeted early in the ball game, maybe he was. But I have a problem with him not having, you know, a higher level of contribution to the offense. You know, you want to have him involved earlier in the game. I think Allen needs to up his level of play to this new way or the new style that he's seeing game in and game out and take the challenge and run with it. You know, because this is the new for Allen Robinson.
Right, he's going to see more attention. The better, the more high profile you become, the more they pay attention to you.
He hadn't seen that yet.
No.
This is all new for Allen. And so with great challenge comes or has to have a great response. And so he needs to up his level of play a little bit.
You talk about Blake's confidence maybe in throwing to him, maybe if he was tightly covered, whatever the case. To me, that seemed to be evident, and I'm watching it, you know, as a layman watching on the TV broadcast, listening to you guys describe it. But the throw down the middle to Julius Thomas, where he had a defender in front of him, defender behind him, but he had a gap in between. He kind of sailed it over his head. You remember the one I'm talking about? Pretty early on in the game, it was a pretty deep pattern down
seam,
the field.
It was a seam route.
Yeah,
it was a seam route and a good throw.
You thought it was a good throw?
Yeah, Yeah, I thought that Julius Thomas slowed down on the route.
Real? Okay, so that's on Julius Thomas.
Yeah, I think Julius, if he had kept running through the route, and what he did was when he felt like he was open initially, I think the ball could have been thrown sooner by Blake. But when he threw it, I thought that it was okay. But when Julius turns to look back, a lot of times when you turn, your head has to be
slow
just
your
what's
momentum.
Turned. When he turned, he kind of turned his body. And when his body turns, and I don't think this was anything that was consciously made where he decides to slow down, but when you turn your body to that level, you can't run as fast as you would like to run. So it's not like it's a loaf or anything like that, but he's just got to continue to run, keep his head back, shoulders still going up the field, and just run.
You mentioned Telvin played well in this game. Linder played well in this game. You look at the stat sheet, Dante Fowler with a couple of sacks and I think five solo tackles in this game.
He was better. He was better. He still got to learn how to, what I call, get to the point to be an effective rusher. One of his sacks is borderline. You know, I think Phillip Rivers got that ball out, and I think probably 8 times out of 10, most officials would have said that was an incomplete pass, but they ruled him in the grasp. You know, but still, productive day. The one time he came underneath and looped, you know, so right now he's got 2 sacks that have been sacks to what I wouldn't say that he created them. You know, he's kind of cleaning up. One of them was a stunt where he's coming up underneath, and he's, you know, look, he can come underneath like nobody because he's so athletic. So, I mean, that's a positive. The other one was kind of a cleanup sack, but that's a good sign. I mean, it's a good sign. But, you know, when he rushes, his greatest attribute is his speed and athleticism. I mean, there's so much more room for growth. He's not even really utilizing the speed yet. You know, as a pass rusher, you basically put a dot on the field about, you know, with when you have great speed, like 5 or 6 yards up the field. And your first three, four steps are to that point as fast as you can go. And then at that point, then you react. You give them a little shimmy. You keep going and go all the way around the edge. But I think he's engaging the tackle really too early at 3.5, 4 yards and is not threatening with great speed yet. And that's something he's going to learn, and he is learning. And that's something that they're coaching him up to do. So I think that will come in time.
And Ngakoue with the strip sack, and he also had a pressure early on. I believe it was a 3rd and 8 that forced an incompletion. How did he play?
I thought he played well in the pass rush. There's still a lot to be gained in the run game. And that was his knock coming out for the University of Maryland. That was some commentary by me watching him in the preseason that he has to get better. There was one long run that Melvin Gordon had where they brought – remember Telvin Smith came up the middle and he nearly got Melvin Gordon. Gordon got it and started going up the field. That was a double A-gap blitz, and it's his own blitz, and so you're dropping Ngakoue in the coverage. And when Ngakoue starts to drop, identifies that it's run, he's got a guy coming up in the hole, and he just – kind of turns his shoulder to take him on as almost a one gap defender. When you're a dropper like that, you've got to face him up. You got to face him up, attack it, and be ready to kind of play off of both ways, because, and especially don't turn to where the guy goes to the outside. You're running a double A gap blitz. So you guys, as radio commentators, where do you think your help is at? Double A gap blitz inside, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so the last thing you want to do is turn your shoulder and allowed to go outside. And so, I mean, it's a learning thing for him. His pass rush is very good. He's a very polished player. What he did on Phillip Rivers, the ball awareness, there's not many rookies that come in and have the awareness and the wherewithal to go for that strip when you're not completely clean. And so the ball awareness, outstanding by him. He's a very polished player for where he's at, and I expect him to get a lot better. But he's got to start seeing better improvement in the run game, because right now, defensively, they need everybody to be better in the run game.
All right, let's take our first time out of the morning. Jeff Logman is in the studio, as you probably have noticed by now. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Check the Tape Tuesday. If you'd like to get in with Logs, there are a number of ways to do it. We just asked you a question of the day. Was simply, you question Logs. What do you got for him? What do you want to know about after yesterday's film review of watching the All-22 coaches tape? You can send those in via Twitter, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Logs56, L-O-G-S-56. Also, the Jaguars Today Facebook page. 641-1010 on the phone lines and the text line driven by Duval Ford at the same number. We'll certainly get into a lot of the issues that have been talked about over the last 48 hours or so with Jeff Logman, get his perspective on what went wrong with the Jags on the West Coast and how do they bounce back, more importantly now, going ahead against the Baltimore Ravens this weekend. With Fat Tony and Jeff Logman, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today, live at Everbank on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
We talk about the truth, and there was not much good to take from the game. You know, you look at all four quarters, and, you know, we're well aware of, as a team, we didn't play very well, and it wasn't to our standard. You know, you try to find some things that are positive, and I'm sure there are. But as a whole, you know, when you're down 35-0 going in the fourth quarter, there's not a lot of good that took place.
That's very similar to what we've been saying for the last couple of days. I mean, you could point to a couple of individual superlatives, but that doesn't excuse the overall stink fest of the performance that the Jags had in San Diego. It's not the loss. It's the manner in which they didn't compete, yep. I think. You know, down 35-0.
Yeah, and it was when Gus talks about all three phases, I mean, he's dead on the money. I mean, defensively, you know, when you face a great quarterback, you can't allow a great quarterback to have balance, you know, and you did. I mean, and it started right out of the gate on the first drive where, you know, they ran the ball for 58 yards on a 75-yard drive.
Right.
And then offensively, you had the first five possessions of the game. You had three giveaways, two interceptions, a fumble by Blake,
yep.
And you could put all three of them on him. And then you had a missed field goal, there's special teams in there, that gave the Chargers the ball, I think, on the minus 44. Then you add into the fact that special teams, beyond the missed field goal, had not a great punt by Brad Nortman on one. Then you had a punt return that had a penalty, a clip in the back by Josh Johnson that backed him up at a point in the ball game where you're hoping to kind of get back into it a little bit, you know? So, I mean, it's, if there's ever a way to lose, I mean, they hit all three areas in that now.
Now, let's get to some of these questions. Got a lot of them coming in for you, and there's only so much Tony and I can answer without the extensive film review that you put in. So here's one, and this, look, I'm sure you've heard a lot. There's been a lot of questioning the coaching staff, right? Is Gus the right guy? So on and so forth. I'll ask you a general one that I got here from Tony on the Facebook page on Jaguars Today Facebook. Are the Jags being outcoached or outplayed? Which is the bigger problem right now? And I think one of the things that people are pointing to is San Diego scheming to seemingly isolate Paul Posluszny on some guys that he certainly, you would think, quickness-wise, there's no business trying to chase around. Now, maybe it's not as it appears to the naked eye. What do you think? Coaching?
Well, I mean, to answer the question, I mean, they got out-coached and they got out-played. I mean, that was a shared one right there. I mean, when you have a performance like that, there's no pointing fingers among anybody. You know, for that specific play, I get what they're trying to do. I mean, you're trying to disguise.
Which one are you talking about now?
The Posluszny one.
Benjamin on at the 4-yard line.
Yeah, it was like an over route, deep over route, where he catches the ball and Posluszny's, you know, oh my God, all I can see is the back of his jersey.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking about the one down near the goal line where he ran the crossing route and scored from like the 4.
Yeah, but, you know,
Scooter got lost on that too.
Well, I think that was a zone. So, I mean, you got guys traveling through zones, you know, but the easiest one to talk about, I think, is the one where Paz is covering Travis Benjamin. And on that play, you're trying to disguise. And where you have Posluszny walked out to the guy that's the third wide receiver on one side, which is a typical alignment when you run a zone. Okay, so they're trying to show zone and play man and bring pressure. And I get it. But, boy, and you're trying to fool Phillip Rivers, which you might have fooled him for a split second. But once the play started developing and the protection picked up the pressure, then it becomes very easy for Phillip Rivers. And that one is on the coaches right there. I mean, that's, you know, if you've got a pressure that you feel great about, I still don't think you do that where you got that kind of a matchup because, you know, Travis Benjamin is an elite speed guy. And that's a mismatch. And Phillip Rivers was able to expose that. So, you know, that's a tough situation to be in. You know, it's much like, you know, a lot of people are sitting there, you know, I think reaction-wise, and it's understandable. You know, why isn't Miles Jack out there? He's better suited to do that. Well, maybe he is, but at the same token, would Miles Jack be ready to handle the adjustments of doing something like that in a game situation. And clearly the coaches feel that he's not ready to do that. You know, so when
is that, let me interrupt you for a second. Is that understandable given his circumstances? Because you have Blake Martinez, right, who's also a rookie up in Green Bay, as we saw him
started last week.
He's taken on a lot of responsibility, I would assume, you know, as the starting middle linebacker up in Green Bay. Is Miles just not picking it up as quickly as he should? Is this on the coaching staff to have him prepared? Why isn't he ready to take on a larger role?
I think it's probably twofold. One, Paul Posluszny is a pretty good football player, and so you got to be pretty good to be able to take him out of the lineup. Number two is that you're facing Aaron Rodgers and then Phillip Rivers, and if you're not clean, because they weren't on that play, then they're going to expose you. And so I think, I don't want to say it's fear, but it's concern that you've got a young player that could be in a lineup against a high level quarterback, and two of them that might end up wearing yellow jackets one day, to where a young player has to line up and handle that. Whereas Martinez is a guy for the Green Bay Packers, very veteran defense. He was, I think, one of two rookies that was starting in that defense against the Jaguars, and he's going against a third year young quarterback in Blake Bortles. And so defensively, as a coach, you're saying, I feel better about Blake Martinez going against a Blake Bortles versus having a Miles Jack going against an Aaron Rodgers or a Phillip Rivers.
All right, let's hear, before we get to the phones, because they're loading up right now, let's hear what Gus had to say when asked yesterday on the conference call about Posluszny getting matched up with Travis Benjamin.
You can look at that. There's pressures we have that we try to disguise. And, if you want to be multiple in some of your looks and how you're doing pressures, that matchup right there is difficult. But in some of our base things, I don't want to go into too much detail, but there's at times when Puz or the linebackers have to do that. And, it's something that we've done before. It has not been an issue, but, he's got great speed there. And, there's things that we observe as coaches. And, we look at matchups and things like that, and that was a tough matchup. So we all take responsibility on that one.
I think he hit it dead right on the head. Then what he's talking about is, they're trying to disguise. If you've got the third wide receiver to one side and Posluszny's walked out, quarterback's thinking, okay, it's a zone. If Paz is back inside or split out wide to where maybe Gates goes or Melvin Gordon goes, then they're going to, okay, it's man. Well, they know it's man if Paz is somewhere match. They know it's man if Paz is in the interior core where Melvin Gordon was or the back was on that play, and then a corner is now out on the trips guy. So it's a dead giveaway when you line up and match up. So it's trying to disguise it, and it's not a good matchup. For me, I wouldn't call that. I think it's too big of a risk.
Maybe out of the playbook. that one going forward. We'll see.
I think that might be an example of trying to do too much as a coach, and maybe be too tricky.
Right.
And sometimes you got to go, well, if we get here, then if it's against Teddy Bridgewater, against Blake Bortles,
some young guy,
younger guy,
hadn't seen it all.
Yeah. Well, you'd hope the pressure gets there before. He can find it, but boy, Phillip Rivers is so quick with the ball and so quick with his mind. That's a hard one to put in there.
All right, let's go to the lines for the first time this morning. 641-1010, and welcome Steve in Ponte Vedra to Jaguars today. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning, guys. So my first thing is Marquise Lee. I think he's definitely thrown off our offense. I think it's taken Allen Robinson out of the game because Blake's going to him, and he's not catching the ball. So hopefully there's some adjustments made there. Secondly, on defense, Jonathan Cyprian still out of position. I was watching him the whole game, out of position every single time. Your thoughts?
I don't know what you're talking about when he's out of position every single time. I think he can be better, and I said that last week, but to say that he's out of position every single time is just not true. The statement about Marquise Lee messing up the offense, look, it's not Marquise Lee's fault if he's the guy that's open and he's getting the ball thrown his way. I mean, Marquise Lee, what is he? I'm looking at his numbers right now. 7 catches for 97 yards, averaging 14 yards a catch. What's wrong with that?
Right. He didn't make Blake throw the ball behind
him. No.
Right. I mean, that to me, you're going to play more than two wide receivers out there. You're not going to have, you know, you're going to have three and four wide receiver sets, and every star receiver deals with that, you know, potential to throw a wrinkle into the offense around the National Football
League. Marquise Lee is not the problem. You know, the first game, could he have caught the ball that was a little bit behind him? Yes. That was on him, and it was on Blake. This one.
No chance.
He had no chance. I think the route could have been better. It was kind of rounded. But if he squared it off and made it look a little better, made the route better, would it have made that big of a difference with that throw? I don't think so.
Right.
You know, that ball was, you know, yard and a half, 2 yards behind Marquise on that one.
I'll give Steve the benefit of the doubt that he's using a little hyperbole on Cyprian, okay, on the every play out of position. But overall, how did he play in this game?
I thought that he, you know, he tackled well. He ended up with like 8 or 9 tackles. He had a fumble recovery on the one sack in which Ngakoue ended up getting. I thought he did okay. You know, the week before, I was like, you know, he's got to be better than that. And I thought this week he was okay. You know, if you wanted to point to, you know, to one guy, it's hard to do that in this game because it was almost like it was a merry-go-round. You know, and all of a sudden the wheel that they spin on Wheel of Fortune. You know, you don't know where it's going to stop.
Right.
You know, one time it's the end, the next time it's the tackle, the next time it was a safety, next time it was a corner. You know, they took turns on making mistakes, and you just can't take turns on making mistakes, and a couple of them were big. You know, we were just talking a few minutes ago about the long pass play to Tyrell Williams.
Yeah.
And Posluszny's in chase, and everybody's going, man, Posh, you can't cover the guy. What's wrong with you? Well, it's a 4-under-3 deep zone. You know, and Gratz is the nickelback this week because of the injury to Mukamura. And so Gratz, if you're the nickelback lined up in the slot, you've got Devon House playing the corner position outside. He's a deep third player. So when he retreats with his guy, he's out of the picture. There's no flat player now. So when Gratz has the slot run up the seam and then bends it on like a post route, he's got to squeeze with his eyes back to the inside looking for a crosser. And when his guy reaches a certain area, okay, it's time to pass him off to Posluszny. Now it's time to he's going to go up to Sean. The next time he's going to get run into the zone of Jalen Ramsey on the other side. He was still running with the guy all the way over to Sean and all the way over to Jalen Ramsey. And meanwhile, Paz, I think when the ball is thrown underneath the Tyrell Williams, is going, okay, I got a guy right out there to make the tackle. Well, that guy was gone. He was gone to the other side deep to the field. You know, and Gratz has to squeeze, look across the field, find out somebody that's coming across, and he never even looked. I mean,
yeah,
just like he's playing
it.
Man.
You could see it. Puz looked over there, and it was like, all right, we ran him right into it, and there was nothing there, and then he's just turning and chasing. It looks like Puz is chasing another guy, so the fans are all over
him. Oh, it's Puz. He's not slow enough at Miles Jack, and it's not Puz.
Yeah,
I do
think the caller and a lot of fans are trying to figure out what's going on with this offense, and I know we got to step aside here, but when we get back, if we could talk a little bit about how they get this offense going. And I think there's a couple things. Blake obviously wasn't good on Sunday.
There's two things.
But there's no balance to what they're doing on the offensive side of the ball.
No
right
balance.
Now,
and let me just add one thing to the play that Gratz kind of messed up there. Then, you know, okay, so then you peel around, you know, you go down the field, and then you miss a tackle to stop the touchdown.
Right.
Not good.
All right, we'll get to what they can do to get the offense going. We'll get more calls coming up on the other side as well. It's 641-1010 with Jeff Loggeman and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today live at EverBank on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
This is the quarterback here at Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right, as we move along here, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony. Logs, this is the time I like to give you a little update on what happened fantasy-wise on Sunday.
Well,
congratulations once again. Top scorer of the week.
Really?
For Jeff Loggeman. You put up 64 points with your trio of Derek Carr, David Johnson, Julio Jones. I was second, and we are running away from the rest of the field. You had 64. I had 54 this week, so I got some work to do to catch up. But I had Blake, C.J. Anderson, Alshon Jeffrey, Tony Boselli with 31 points.
Mm.
Good for third.
Ooh.
J.P. with 30 points.
And who did he pick? He had one pick that went.
Wentz. It went last night. He was a big scorer for him. He was our, well, you know, fantasy wise, not as hot, but.
Pro Football Focus has Carson Wentz as the number one quarterback in football through 2 weeks.
He's not turning it over.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's winning games. Good for him.
And where he's at? Pretty good.
Frank Frangi had the indignity of drafting Adrian Peterson this week. So he ended up with 29 on the week. Now, an atypical day for Aaron Rodgers as well, with only 18. Baselli had Jameis Winston's 4 interception
day. Yeah, not a good day for him.
As an albatross. So congrats to Logs, who has built a nice early season cushion at the top of the standings for the Jaguars.
Only temporary, Mike. I know you're lurking there.
Oh, I'm lurking, buddy. I'm not giving up. We got 15 weeks to go, so we'll see how it all turns out. But good start for you, my man. All right, you said, speaking of good starts, a couple of things Jags can do to get off to better starts offensively. What are they?
Number one, run the ball. Run the ball effectively
run the ball.
How do you do that?
Both. Run the ball effectively and run the ball.
You know, how?
Better blocking, better running, better players. You know, and hopefully there's a chance that Chris Ivory gets back this week.
Is TJ who's he only had 7 carries this week, 7 for 28.
Not enough.
Understood.
Tempo of the game kind of dictated that somewhat.
Why aren't they having success though? Bigger success running the ball. Right now, is it more on TJ? Is it the line? Is it a combination?
It's
of things?
A combination of both.
Is he not getting everything he could out of these runs?
Well, I mean, there's one run in particular. Remember, where he juked the 2 guys in the hole, where you went, "Wow!" I mean, he did that one on his own because he left 2 unblocked linebackers, and that's what I want to focus in on: 2 unblocked linebackers, and he shimmies on up the field. Beautiful play, but the unblocked linebackers were a problem. The offensive line has to do a better job of getting to second level, and the linebackers, the Perryman, Manti Te'o did a really good job of staying pretty clean. And I think that's on the offensive line. The combo blocks to where they double a guy and then one of them's got to come off to get up to that second level has to be better. And I think that's something that they got to improve on. It's going to be a challenge this week because now you're looking at possibly not having Kelvin Beachum and starting a new left guard, you know, whether it's Chris Reed or Tyler Shatley. My expectation is it would probably be a Chris Reed. You know, and I said this during the game broadcast, you know, you got to look at maybe, and I wasn't expecting an injury to Kelvin Beachum, but you know, you go back and you looked at the preseason numbers and the production. You had Luke Jokel, left tackle, and then you had Chris Reed or McKenzie Bernardo, whatever his name was, at left guard.
Poor guy.
Yeah. You had him at left guard, so I mean, you got to take a look at it. You know, and our conversation was, remember, we talked about what would you do for the opening game with your offensive line combination. And I said that, you know, I don't know if there's a right answer to that, but the comfortable answer might have been to go into the regular season opener with the production you were getting in the preseason with Luke Jokel at left tackle and then, you know, Chris Reed at left guard since he was the one who made the roster, although he kind of finished the preseason a little dinged up. But right now you're averaging, if you take out Blake Bortles' rushing numbers, you're averaging 2.5 yards a carry.
Ugh.
That's not very good.
Right. But a lot of that is because of week one. But regardless, I think, you know, people saw the screen game as an extension of the running game this week.
Yeah, but it's not because, you know, the screen game, I think, is set up from an effective run game. So I think the screen game is a complement to the passing game more so than a complement or a sidecar with a running game.
Either way, it was horribly ineffective.
The screen game is awesome, you know, when you can have – you know, 2nd and 2, 2nd and 3 sometimes because teams are like, look, they're going to take a shot deep, play action us, let's go ahead and pin our ears back.
Right.
You know, a lot of people think, well, it's 1st and 10 or whatever, you know, but it's not.
Okay, so run the ball. What else? What's the other one?
Better play out of the quarterback. You know, better play out of the quarterback. You know, I think he's pressing. I think he feels that he has to carry the load, and that's not the case. He's trying to score all his points in one drive. You can't do that. You know, a little nervousness in the pocket, and I'm not saying it's a scared nervousness. It's a not comfortable movement in the pocket where he has to be able to make better decisions to where he has a comfort level in the pocket. His feet are calm. But most importantly, he has to take better care of the football. The throw that he made, the interception down the field, and I don't know if it was going to Rashad or if it was going to Allen Hurns, but let's say it was going to Rashad. Was it a good throw?
Nope.
No. Let's say it was throwing he's throwing the ball to Allen Hurns. Was it a good throw?
Worst throw.
No.
Maybe. I still don't know who he's throwing to on that play. I really don't.
First of all, there shouldn't have been two guys right there anyway. Okay. The spacing by the wide receivers were wrong. And my guess is, because I'm not in the room, Allen Hurns is the wide guy. Okay. When you watch them both start to head up the field, Rashad has the nickel in his face, and he kind of does a little shuffle trying to find a way to get past him at speed. And when he does, he goes to the outside.
Yeah.
You can't do that. You got to go to the inside, because what you're trying to do is to have one-on-one in both areas. One guy towards the safety, the deep third player, and the other one to the corner to the outside. So that's a bust on Rashad Greene.
All right, let's get a few calls in here before
but regardless, we
break. Go ahead.
Not a good throw either way, right?
No.
Nope.
No. John on the south side, you're up next. Thanks for hanging on. What's up?
Hey. So I want to talk about the quarterback play a little bit, like you guys are talking about. Blake had a really bad game last game, but I don't think it's a one-game thing. I mean, he's had 32 starts now, and he continues to make the same mistakes with accuracy, and it seems like he predetermines his reads, and he's going there regardless of who's there. So I guess my question is, at what point do we say he might not be a franchise guy? And what about lifting a guy like Garoppolo and giving the second-round pick for him, making a bold move, because we got to do something? 6-24 or something as a starter. What do you guys think about making these like that?
Well, I don't think you can make, you know, final judgments based on two games and to say that he is what he is. I mean, if you were going to make that comment, then after year one, you would have said, boy, he's not very good, right?
Sure.
And then all of a sudden last year he throws for 35 touchdowns, even though he still had 18 interceptions. But right now he has not shown that in the two regular season games. In the preseason, I thought we all saw great improvement. I don't think you'd find anybody that would disagree with that. But it has not carried over to the regular season. What's the difference? Well, the difference is 2.5 yards a rush. You know, you're not running the ball effectively, and you're not getting into manageable situations for your quarterback or manageable scores. So you're not accomplishing a lot of things as a team. You're not stopping the opponent. You're not running the ball efficiently, and you're not giving the quarterback the best opportunity. But even if you have all that, you still have to have better performances by the quarterback and more execution on third down. I mean, it's not a good combination when you have 2.5 yards you're getting 2.5 mm-hmm. yards a rush, and then you're giving up 4.1 yards per rush as a defense against great quarterbacks. And then you add on top of that the third down production to where as an offense you're at 23%, and defensively you're giving up 51%. Those aren't good numbers.
No. I've always gotten the sense with Blake, too, that he's been a guy who presses a little bit when they trail in games. And this year, look, they didn't trail much against Green Bay. It was always a one-score game in that game. But against San Diego, it felt like with the added expectation of this team, they're down 21. You can't get all 21 on one drive. And that's kind of what that throw felt like, was just kind of this, I'm going to throw it up, I'm going to get us back into this game, and just made a bad decision with the football in that case.
Yeah, I think you go back to, I think what Blake was talking about, a conversation that he had, and it might have been with Aaron Rodgers when they played golf together. And he said, you know, great piece of advice that he gave me. He said, don't try to score 21 points on one drive. And I think that he did that in San Diego. He's trying to score 21 points on one drive. I mean, you look at this ball game, and even when you're down 14-0, you know, you got a great opportunity there to put a drive together and score a field goal. You don't.
Yeah.
You know, okay, then it's 21. And then Blake on a 3rd-and-13 gets sloppy with the ball. And instead of taking a sack and punting it, maybe playing another down, It's a caused fumble. Sack caused fumble on him. And that's directly related to him because the ball was loose and it was down low. You go to the two-minute drive at the end of the half. Okay, you got an opportunity to get a field goal. You're in range for an opportunity at a field goal. He takes the sack.
By the way, what was that play call with 9 seconds left?
I have no idea.
I mean, your options are Hail Mary or maybe a 10-yard out.
I have
right?
no idea what that was. I mean, to me, that's, you know, it's your last play.
Right.
That's a Hail Mary situation.
Right, or maybe you have 9 seconds. You can run a quick out to the sideline, possibly try to get a long field goal in, something like that. Those are your two options.
Can't explain that one.
Inexplicable. All right, we got to take a timeout here. We're behind on time. I promise you we'll try to get to more of your calls coming up at 641-1010. The Dayton football and the Honda drive around the NFL right around the corner as well with Jeff Loggeman and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, here you go. Here's what happened on this date in football history. Let's go back to 1933. The Pittsburgh Steelers, although they were called the Pirates at that point in time, played their first NFL game. They took an L, 23-2 in the first game ever played for that franchise. 1982, what began on this date in 1982? How about a 57-day player strike? Remember that one? Shortened the season and Washington won the Super Bowl, I think, coming out of that year, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Walter Payton, on this date in football history, scored an NFL record 107 touchdown, which beat Jim Brown's record at the time. There are three running backs that have since surpassed Walter Payton in career touchdowns on the ground. You guys know who they are. What
LT.
Do you got? LT is one. Come on.
Emmett?
Emmett, of course, and I just had the third one right up in front of me, and my computer just failed me, so I couldn't tell you who it is at the moment. But it was definitely Emmett's got the most, LT's got the second most, and who was, it's Marcus Allen, that's who it was,
yeah. Okay.
Was the third one. They've all, since Walter Payton's time, taken over that top three spots. Famous birthdays for this date, Jim Taylor, he was a fullback, but fullbacks used to run the ball, and he was a very successful guy doing that for the Green Bay Packers. In the 1960s, the 1962 NFL MVP, a five-time Pro Bowler, one-time first-team All-Pro, and a Hall of Fame inductee in 1976. Jim Taylor, 81 years young today. Also, birthdays on this date, born in 1988. Kobe Fleener, formerly of the Colts, now with the Saints, is 28. And Carlos Hyde, the running back for the San Francisco 49ers, turns 25 years old today. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Jim Taylor, I read about him this offseason, among the first guys that believed in like diet and exercise in the National Football League. And everyone looked at him like a weirdo that he would want to lift weights to get ready for an NFL football season. And he was strong as a bull there for the Green Bay Packers. Minnesota running back Adrian Peterson tore the meniscus in his right knee on Sunday Night Football. The injury is expected to keep AP sidelined for a short time, but the team is not given a timetable for when they expect him to return. In fact, head coach Mike Zimmer yesterday would not rule Peterson out for the Vikings game this week against the Carolina Panthers, so we'll watch that going forward this week. Chicago quarterback Jay Cutler left last night's 29-14 loss to Philadelphia on Monday Night Football during the fourth quarter after throwing an interception to get the thumb on his throwing hand looked at. Cutler was not able to return to the game. He will undergo further tests today to determine the extent of the injury and whether he will be forced to miss any time for Chicago. On the other side, number two overall pick Carson Wentz, impressive for the second week in a row, leading the Eagles to a victory and a 2-0 record. Wentz and the Eagles have not turned the ball over through two games this season. The guy picked right ahead of Wentz, Jared Goff, selected number one overall, has been inactive for the first two games in Los Angeles. The Rams have instead started Case Keenum. They are 1-1 despite having scored only three field goals and no touchdowns on the season. Rams head coach Jeff Fisher yesterday said that Keenum will remain the starter for now, but knows they need more out of that side of the ball, saying, quote, "We need more production out of our offense, and all things point towards the quarterback position, but I'm expecting Case to continue to get better in this offense, and we're going to win games and score points." And that is the Honda driver on the NFL.
All right, we'll get to, because I know you want to talk about penalties coming up, but let's get a couple calls in here, and we'll hold that discussion for the next segment, starting with Jesse in Miami up next at 641-1010. Good morning, Jesse.
Hey, good morning, Jacksonville fans. What's up? What's up? Hey, first of all, I'm not trying to steal the show nothing like that, though. But I just need every caller to call in for now on. I mean, just for the day, and just say, do your job, then get it coming. But I got a question. Do you think Coach Bradley going to be more involved now in the defense and see that it's a lack of potential there? Do you think he's going to be more involved in the defense?
I think he already is very involved in the defense. You know, I mean, first of all, him and Todd Walsh were roommates going all the way back to North Dakota State. I think they're working hand in hand. I think Gus
did they get together to watch Carson last night? Carson Wentz?
Probably not.
Just kidding.
Probably not. I'm sure that they were working together to put the game plan together. But, you know, I think Gus is very involved in defense right now. You know, so I don't think that anything's going to change there. I think he's going to continue to be involved. You know, they've got three very good minds there. You know, Monty Kiffin, Gus Bradley, and Todd Walsh. You know, Dwayne Walker's a very good mind as well, the defensive backs coach. So they've got some good minds there. They just need to get the execution better.
A couple of things. Malik Jackson, not on the field to start the second half.
Yeah, I didn't like that. You know, and I think that's a rotation thing. I don't think it was anything more than that. You know, you're trying to keep everybody fresh and rolling through, but, you know.
Seems odd, though, that you would do that with, you know, coming out of the halftime break. You know,
when that's the thing that I think I found a little bit surprising was that, you know, that's the drive that, you know, that, hey, look, if it was a long drive and they gave him a couple plays off and then they put him right back in, I could get it, but it was a relatively short drive. It was like three plays and then a touchdown to Tyrell Williams
That
little underneath route. So, but yeah, I agree with you because you had the halftime. You had the drive there at the end of the game that the Chargers had three and punt, and then the Jaguars had the last possession of the first half. Then you have
plus
the halftime, and then they have the first possession of the second half. To me, that's ample time to allow him to recover, and he should have been out there.
You would think. Also, Odrick.
He couldn't have covered the crossing route, though.
No,
sure.
I'm not saying he would have. I'm just saying.
That would have been really bad scheme.
When you pay a guy $90 million, you don't expect to see the fourth-round rookie starting the second half at his position. Odrick's outburst / meltdown, however you want to describe it. Clearly, it wasn't about one play. I think it was frustration boiling over, at least in my opinion. But how do you handle that? When a guy does that, did Gus try? You know, Gus is a calm guy. He tries to be the calm guy as the head coach, or he's more a fiery coordinator type. And I think you can be that more when you're the coordinator. But in that circumstance, who needs to go up to Odrick and say, hey, man, get a grip. You know, you're losing focus, or you're costing us, or this has gone way too far. How was it handled properly or improperly, and how should it have been handled?
Well, first of all, I don't know exactly what set him off. Was it the play that he was penalized for being in the neutral zone? He felt that the tight end twitched, which he did. It's very clear. But look, even if that happens and the officials missed it, that doesn't give you cause to act and react the way you did, because you ended up getting a penalty on your football team and you were taken off the field, and then you acted, to be quite honest, you acted like a child. You know, throw your helmet down, start yelling, hollering, screaming. To me, there was no reason for that. How was it handled by Gus? I don't know. I wasn't there. I can tell you how I would have liked to have seen it handled, and that, you know, the head coach should have gone over there and said, you've got 2 seconds to calm down, and if you don't, you can take your rear end of the locker room. Pretty simple.
All right, let's move along. Thank you, Jesse, for the call. Let's go to Tom in downtown Jacksonville next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, guys. Jeff, just talking about coaching, not so much X's and O's, because I'm certainly not an expert there, but Gus is an all-time nice guy. And we seem to keep having mistake after mistake. And I watch on TV on Saturday, and when, say, Alabama makes a mistake, there's no wait till after the game to say we didn't do this right. It's done right then and there for all the public to see. Belichick's much the same way. With a young football team, are they going to respond to, you know, we're a nice guy and we'll handle it after the game, or is it better to handle it during the game? I know as a player, if you're a guy that goes all out, you're that guy like you were, like Tony was, like so many of our players were, it doesn't matter who the coach is. You're going to give 110% the whole time. But you know, a lot of kids on the team aren't that guy. They have to be given that kick in the butt. And I'm not so sure waiting until after the game and the privacy. I know in today's world, with everybody gets a participation trophy, maybe it's not politically correct, but I remember a guy that used to play for Coach Bryant at Alabama said, the worst thing you ever heard when he came in the locker room was Coach Bryant telling the ball boy, we won't need the footballs today. And they'd go to practice.
Yeah.
They'd get things corrected. They didn't make the same mistake
twice. All right, let me jump in here, Tom, because we're short on time. We got the point. does a nice guy coaching style necessarily work with this group?
Well, I guess, look, I don't know exactly how nice or how not nice Gus Bradley is. You know, I'm not there on the sideline. I'm not in the meeting rooms. I have no idea whether he's nice on game day or whether he's not. What approaches work? I think a lot of approaches can work. There's no one formula that works and one formula that doesn't work. You know, so it's hard to judge because I'm not there to make a statement on that. I think one thing we do know, we're going to find out whether it works. You know, I think that this is a football team that has some talent and some talent to perform well. You know, and my expectation was at the beginning of the year, and it has not changed, 8 or 9 wins.
It hasn't changed.
Nope.
Okay. Let me get Justin in Atlanta next up on Jaguars Today. Go ahead, Justin.
Hey, guys. I played for a while. I played all the way up in college, and I'm not saying I'm an expert or anything like that. But I've been around a lot of coaches that were very stubborn in their own way. Like, they had a philosophy, and it didn't matter what was going on. They were going to stick to that philosophy. It didn't matter, regardless of injuries or anything, they were still going to do the same thing. What I thought was interesting is when I watched ESPN the other day and I heard Randy Moss speaking, they asked him what makes – and I hate Belichick, by the way. But they asked him what makes him such a great coach. And he was like, well, he dissects what you do best and what you do worst. And then he exploits what you do worst. So he focuses on what every team does worst and what they do best, and then he quizzes his players on how to handle each one of those matchups. Now, do you think, my question is, do you think Gus Bradley is one of those coaches that is stubborn and is going to stick to, they're going to run the ball, pass second, doesn't matter what team they're playing, injuries happen or whatever, or is he one of those open-minded coaches that adapts to what's going on in his situation?
Well, I think there's two different thoughts there, in that, you know, are stubborn coaches better, or are the ones that are flexible better? To me, the best coaches are the ones that remain flexible to talent or to design their game plans based upon the available talent they have and the skill set that players have. So Bill Belichick is very flexible from that aspect, but he's very inflexible, I think, on certain other areas. And is he great at X's and O's? Sure he is, because he's got one thing to prove. What makes Bill Belichick a great coach? Super Bowls and wins. That's what makes him a great coach. Not because he's inflexible and stubborn or that he's flexible. He's got the wins to prove it. So whatever he does, it works. Does Gus Bradley have that? I think Gus Bradley is very stubborn in some aspects and very unwavering in his beliefs. You know, his principles about getting better is something that has not changed from day one. You know, and I give him credit for sticking with his beliefs. He never calls out players. He never singles them out. He never – now, what he does in a meeting, I don't know. Maybe he does. Does he call people out and hold them accountable? I expect so, because otherwise you're not going to be in the league for long. You know, so, you know, to answer the question, does he have what it takes? We're going to find out. We're going to find out, because I think this is the year for him to prove that. And we've got 14 games here to see it.
All right, let's take a break. 641-1010. We'll come back. We'll take a look at the penalty situation with the Jacksonville Jaguars continuing into the regular season from way too many of them that we saw in the preseason as well. We hear what Gus had to say about that included. 641-1010, if you'd like to get in, both on the text line driven by Duval Ford and the phone lines. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Jeff Logman here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Wins on Sunday require great performances.
Back to throw, under some pressure.
Performance Painting presents the high-performance play of the game on 1010XL. Performance Painting, quality coatings applied with pride. Now more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we continue on a Check the Tape Tuesday here. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Tony Smith here with you live at Everbank in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studio. As this is what Gus had to say after the game. This is Sunday. He was asked about the penalty situation, how many the Jaguars have been incurring.
And I know some people will argue that some of the better teams in the league get penalized. I don't know if it's the more penalties you have means that you're not going to be successful. I don't know if that's an accurate fact. But I know we want to eliminate them from our game. You know, we want to play cleaner. To have as many as we did is not acceptable. And because it comes back to the ones that we can control. There's foolish penalties in there. Now, if you're talking foolish penalties, I agree. I agree. We got to eliminate those from our game. Our whole thing was I think we're an offense that can play pretty well if we stay on schedule. And when you have foolish penalties that come back and keep you from being on schedule, it becomes an issue.
Yeah, what about it?
13 for 93 in the ball game.
Yeah.
There's two classifications of penalties, mental and aggressive. The mental ones are easily preventable. For example, false starts. You know, knowing the snap
like on
count.
Their first offensive play.
Yeah, the first offensive play, all of a sudden it's first and 10, and then it impacts the rest of the drive, and that one was on Julius. And then I think it was two plays later, you have that little quick screen to T.J. Yeldon as he moaches out of the backfield, and Julius is on the wing to that side, so he's got to release and then go and block the guy that comes out to cover him in man. And Julius, false start on the first play. Well, on the third play, he's late getting out of his stance, probably concerned about the false start, and then he's not there in time to pick the guy off in front of T.J. to make a decent gain on the play because it would have sprung it for a decent gain if he was there. Luke Jokel had a false start. Luke Jokel had a holding penalty. Both of those were mental. One of them, he's tripping up and he's falling backwards and he pulls the guy down.
What do you do though in that circumstance? Like if you're an offensive lineman, you think, man, my quarterback's going to get killed because I'm whatever the cause, I'm about to be on the ground and this guy's going to blast my quarterback. Isn't that a natural instinct to grab that guy or not?
Well, the instinct needs to be is let him go, and then while you're on your back and your legs are coming up, use your legs to trip him up.
Uh-huh.
Because that's not holding.
Right.
You know, get in his way another way. Use your arms to block his legs as he's stepping on your chest.
All right. I got you. By the way,
defensively, send Derek Marks on 4th and 1 when Phillip Rivers goes to the hurry up. So you had send Derek and Odric both jump into the neutral zone on that one. I mean, that's a mental penalty.
Yeah.
And we should have been aware with that hurry up mode and Phillip Rivers that he's going to at first
How do you eliminate it? All right, we know there are too many. How do you – I mean, is it an accountability thing? Is it, hey, the next guy who gets one of these is coming out of the game? I mean, do you do?
Whatever it takes. I mean
– What would you suggest? What would you suggest? I mean, it has to stop, but it hasn't stopped up to this point. So what would you try to get – what would have motivated you to
I think the most important thing is, and the greatest motivation of all, is a football team where accountability is widespread. It's not just from, you know, because I think the first reaction is, well, coaches have to hold them accountable. Well, yeah, that's natural. But the other form of accountability that is way stronger than coaches holding players accountable is teammates holding teammates accountable. Leadership, ownership of the football team. Having the guys, whether it be the ones that wear the C, Paul Posluszny, Blake Bortles, whoever, you know, could be Malik Jackson, even the guys that don't wear a C on their chest on game day. Those are the ones that have to hold each other accountable to where the expectations are higher. That's the most important thing. You know, you go back to 1996, you know, when we had a pretty good football team to make a good run at the end of the year. And people say, well, Tom Coughlin really changed the way that he, you know, dealt with the team. No, he didn't change. He didn't change at all. You know, the team made a conscious decision because there was a lot of complaining and moaning about Tom at the midpoint of that season that, look, this is our football team. You know, we control our football team, and the players took ownership of it, and we went on a great run. And this team, players need to take ownership of it, hold each other accountable, hold each other to a higher level of production, and this team will get better.
All right, let's get back to the phones. William's downtown. He's checking in on Jaguars today. Good morning, William.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hey, I want to talk about the running situation. I heard y'all mention this earlier today, saying we need to run the ball more effectively, and I agree, which is why we brought Chris Ivory over. I believe that we're built more for a power back type running game. We got a pretty clear indication in 2014 of what the run game looks like behind Denard Robinson, and then last year, of course, with T.J. Yeldon. And I think you have to have that power back into the equation. They look really good together as a duo in the preseason. My concern is, or my question is, I'm not really sure why we got rid of all of our extra power backs now that we see Chris Ivory is out due to medical issues, and now we're faced with the same situation that we were last year and the year before with TJ Yeldon at one and Denard Robinson at two. I personally thought that Joe Banyard ran the ball really well in the preseason. I'm kind of surprised, I think a lot of other people are surprised, that he didn't make his way on the roster. Now, I'm not saying that Denard Robinson isn't a good back or that he doesn't belong in this league, but for the type of run game that we need, I think it's more important that we have a secondary or a backup power back than, you know, extra speed, shifty running back guys. And I'm just kind of wondering what y'all think.
Best call of the day. Best call of the day. I think he brings up a great point. And I think that, you know, I think when you build a roster, I think that you obviously want to be able to have players in backup roles that, when you have injury, that game plan's not, you know, your style doesn't necessarily change. And with Chris Ivory, if you miss him, where's your next guy that's like him?
Right.
You really don't have it. You know, I was more of a fan of a Joe Banyard or a Jonas Gray making this football team than a Corey Grant or a Denard Robinson. I'm not saying that they're going to be the same effective player as Chris Ivory.
Right. Would you want one of those guys with the speed factor? I mean, with the Grant and Robinson?
I think Grant and Denard Robinson, they're a little different players, but for the most part, they're in the same kind of role.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You can have one of those and one of the other type.
Yeah. I said it when the 53 got released that I would have kept Banyard and cut Denard. Like, that's the decision. Just because of the speed factor with Corey that they don't have in a lot of spots, that would have been the decision I make, because I just don't see at that time what does Denard give you. Like, if you have to go to that point where he's getting significant reps as a running back, what does he give you? And I don't know outside of that what he gives you on special teams at all.
I think that's a great point. I mean, I would have liked to have had more of a true running back because I think Corey Grant and Denard are more package backs than anything else. You know, I think TJ is a great guy to have in a role where he's splitting time. He's a split role player in my mind, and so you needed to have somebody else that, okay, if he doesn't have Chris, who can take the role of Chris? And then the flip side of that, if you don't have TJ, who can fill the role of TJ? And I think, you know, Banyard could have done that. I think that D-Rob could have done that, or Corey Grant could have done that. So I think it would have been nice to have one more guy in the category of Chris Ivory, particularly the last 2 weeks.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Alan on the south side at 641-1010. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for taking
my
call. I pretty much don't have a question. I just am hot. I want to vent. I got a rant. So if you got to cut me off, you cut me off. I'm good. But this is what it is. The Jaguars watched two games, and from last week to this week, nothing's changed. Last year, the same old stuff. We're going to get better. We're going to work better. We're a young team. Everybody loves Gus. Gus is a nice guy. Nice guys don't win. Belichick wins. That's what you got to do. You got to – Tom Coughlin wins. That's who we need. Somebody with some force, some strength. I'm going to get these guys tuned up and running. A coach that knows other coaches' schemes. That's why Coughlin was so good. That's why Belichick is so good. Now, I'm sick of this offense. First of all, Olsen, really? That's why the Raiders let him go. But again, Kiffin, really? Here we go. We got some of the fastest guys in the NFL catching everything. Now, they did drop some balls, and I don't play that. Why are you dropping balls in your professional football player? Anyway, why aren't we using these fast guys to get off the line and catch a 5-yard in? The middle was wide open this last game. Why isn't the can't figure his name right quick. But anyway, we got Rashard Greene. Why you can't run a quick slant in the middle, catch a ball, fall
all right,
out?
Alan, I am going to have to jump in and cut you off because I don't know how long this is going. To the coaching point and the coaching style.
Which point was that?
I guess you need a hard ass.
Yeah. Well, Pete Carroll wins. He's a nice guy.
That's usually the first one. Tony Dungy won.
Tony Dungy was a nice guy.
Yeah.
You know? I think from a fan perspective.
But I understand the frustration.
Yeah, and the question I think becomes, if Gus wasn't a nice guy, would he still be here? I think that's the question that fans are asking. If everyone didn't like Gus, would he be getting a fourth year here in Jacksonville? And I think answer it one way.
Well, I think the situation, and I said this last year, I don't care whether you had a nice guy or, you know, hard butt or whatever kind of coach you had, you know, there wasn't going to be a whole lot of coaches that were going to win.
I think if you're not winning, people want the opposite of what you are.
Sure.
Right? I mean, when Coughlin, towards the end of Coughlin's tenure, oh, he's lost the locker room. He's too hard-ass. Right? We need a player's coach in here. That's what Jack Del Rio came in under that mantle, being the player's coach. And Jack was too soft. He admitted he was too easy on guys when he first got here. And it's tough to be easy and then toughen up. It's easier to come in hard and then let up on guys. I do believe – well, I'm not saying that – ultimately, time will prove whether Gus is the right guy or not, but I don't think it's because of temperament alone. Again, if he were winning or if he were a hard ass and he were losing, maybe you'd want a guy who was a little bit easier on the guys. I just do think you want the opposite of what you typically have. But
I know what they want. They want winning.
Absolutely, yep. They want winning. Right, and they're not getting it right now, so they're trying to say
winning.
We want something different than what we have going on in that regard. All right, we'll come back a few more of your calls with Jeff Logman at 641-1010. If you'd like to get in there, we'll fire a few rapid fire that we got at you on the text line as well, and some of the social media questions that came in. We'll see if we can hit a couple of quick hitters coming up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Jeff Logman here with you. It is Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Foods. Lunchtime is coming. You can always count on Dandy. They're always like clockwork. You know what? Doesn't matter if it's lunchtime, brunch time, breakfast time, mid-afternoon snack, weekend, out and about. You want food on the run, and you don't want it to be greasy and weigh you down. You don't want to sit in the drive-thru for 30 minutes trying to get your food. You want to get on with your life, and you want to do that with quality products that taste great. They're going to fill you up, and you're going to get them at a price you can afford. That's Dandy and the Anytime Deli line of sandwiches and subs. They've got the new breakfast sliders as well. Two-pack of breakfast sliders for only $3. You're not going to beat that deal for breakfast on the go anywhere. And, of course, they've got the new light lunchtime wraps as well. Whether it's lunchtime or anytime, as we tell you, maybe you're tailgating, maybe you're headed to the beach, load up on Dandy sandwiches, fill that cooler up. There's going to be variety that everybody can enjoy. So, folks, whenever you're hungry, you know what I'm going to tell you. Do what I do. Choose Dandy. Choose the Anytime Deli. And go out and make yours a Dandy today.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
The Jaguars are now 0-2 after falling to the Chargers 38-14 on Sunday. Head coach Gus Bradley addressed the poor performance yesterday on a conference call.
We talk about the truth, and there was not much good to take from the game. You know, you look at all four quarters, and, you know, we're well aware of, as a team, we didn't play very well, and it wasn't to our standard. You know, you try to find some things that are positive. I'm sure there are, but as a whole, you know, when you're down 35-0 going in the fourth quarter, there's not a lot of good that took place.
This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, let's hit a few from the text line driven by Duval Ford in reverse order of when we received them, because it's easier for me to do it that way. Jeff, I'm going to start with this one. Does Jeff think players are tuning Gus Bradley out right now? Is he in danger of losing the locker room?
No, I don't get that impression, no.
Okay. I'm just passing them along as they're coming in. Let's see. It's Bill Coward time.
Colin Coward?
No, I think Noel
Bill Coward.
Oh, Bill Cower. He just bought his 17th house in Ponte Vedra, by the way, just so you know.
The guy's not leaving a TV set. Give it up.
This is a good question. How does a teammate hold another teammate accountable? Do they challenge him? I always hear about holding people accountable. How is that actually done? How does that manifest?
It happens in the meetings rooms. It happens on the practice field. It happens on game day. You know, when something that does happen that's not right, the other player addresses it directly with the player that's not doing it the right way.
So accountability is just basically not calling them out. That's too confrontational a term.
A lot of people
pointing out, like being willing to challenge them on their mistakes and holding them to a higher standard.
Yeah, and a lot of people think that, you know, holding people accountable means doing it in front of a broad audience, you know, but that doesn't accomplish anything. But addressing it with the person that's making the issues, you know, that's making it an issue directly.
Okay. Here's another one. Jeff, do you feel Bortles is a leader? We should know by now. I don't feel he is. That one's on the text line.
Well, you know, is he a leader? He was elected a team captain. So, yes, I think he's viewed as a leader in the locker room. But now, for leaders to be great leaders, they have to have production and performance to a certain level before they become great leaders. And he needs to be better on the field to be better as a leader overall.
No, this one in no need for comment necessarily. It says, Mike Garrett here. I'm traveling for work today, flying from Charlotte to Miami while wearing my Jag shirt. And all my fellow travelers are telling me to hang in there, saying that we are on our way up. Oh, I hope they are right. So just passing that along.
Yeah, Ryan Clark picked the Jags as the 0-2 team most likely to make the playoffs this morning on Mike and Mike.
So. Well, all right. I haven't looked at the 0-2 field yet. A couple of my fantasy teams, I feel, are in that boat as well.
Seven teams right now at 0-2.
Because a lot of good teams go 0-2 in the NFL. That's how it works, right?
It's not a good place to be.
No. 8 or 9 wins. This is towards your comment earlier. Mm-hmm. Question mark, wide-eyed emoji, hashtag homerism. That's what you got coming their way.
You got it. People have to understand when I say I expect 8 or 9 wins. That's not what I'm saying. That I think that this team is going to accomplish. You know, there's a difference. My expectation before the season that this team is capable of winning 8 or 9 games.
Okay, so well that clears things up a little bit for people. I think people hear I expect 8 or 9 wins.
I'm not going to change my expectations.
Right, you're still holding them to that standard of, hey, you guys still need to reach 8 or 9 wins for this to be a successful season. I think because when I heard that too, I was like, wow, you still think they're going to win 8 or 9 games at this point in time? That.